because you can keep it real. A severe stutterers are going to have a little more of a challenge.
Exactly. You did it. I love you.
Oh, yeah. Voluntary stuttering make us fluent. I have a very hard time holding my temper. Of course.
Oh, Jamie. Talking about Jamie. Talking about Jamie.
Welcome to Stutter Talk, everybody. We're here for another episode of checking in with Jamie. Eric Jackson here with Peter Reitzis.
Hey, Stutterville.
And the woman of the hour that needs no introduction. I'm going to introduce you anyway. Jamie Rocchio. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Good.
Peter, how are you?
Peter is good. Peter just got done Thanksgiving break and is ready for another break, I gotta tell you.
That's what you get working in the public school system in New York.
Oh, it feels like a grind. It's a good grind. It just feels like a grind.
Stutter Talk at stuttertalk.com. 206-888-4619. I would like to mention at the top of the show here that this Thursday, the Brooklyn chapter of the NSA is having a support group, our monthly support group meeting. It's from 7 to 9 in the Glenwood Lounge on the second floor of the Student Center. If you have any questions about it, feel free to send me an email, and I will give you any further information you need. And also, oh, we're so lucky to have Jamie on because she can tell us about a Rhode Island support group meeting that is coming up.
Yes. The Rhode Island support group meets this coming Monday, December 7th. We meet from 7 to 9 at the University of Rhode Island, right on Route 138 at Independence Square. And I would love for anyone in the area to come on down and see us. If you need information, you can just email me at safeharbor2@cox.net, and hope to see some new faces.
And we'll give you a link on the site page too.
Oh, thank you.
So if people want to get in touch with Jamie, if they have any questions about the support group or anything else stuttering, I'm sure that Jamie will be happy to entertain your questions. Peter.
Absolutely.
Peter, you have an announcement.
Yeah, let's mention that the wonderful Our Time Theater Company, an artistic home for people who stutter, are going to have performances Friday, December 11th at 8 p.m. and Saturday, December 12th at 2 p.m. and 8 p.m. at the Peter J. Sharp Theater, 416 West 42nd Street, between 9th and 10th Avenues in New York City. For more information, go to ourtimetheater.org. Awesome group.
So let's turn the show over to Jamie. Peter, what do you say?
I say that's always turning it over to good hands.
Okay, so first of all, guys, I want to commend you on your last podcast. I think you both expressed your viewpoints. You both finally listened to each other, and I'm so glad that we can move on to other topics.
Well, thank you, Jamie.
You're welcome.
And, Jamie, we appreciate your kind thoughts about episode 162. We worked hard on that episode.
Oh, it sounded it.
I don't know about you, Eric, but that actually felt like work just because it seemed like it took a lot out of us, but it was good.
Yeah, there's a lot of feelings involved with this thing, stuttering, and sometimes they're really powerful ones. So, yes, it was a lot of work, but I am happy with what we put out, too. So, Jamie, thank you for the compliment there, and what's on your mind for today?
Well, you know, I communicate with some of your listeners, and you know, when you talk stuttering, lots of questions come up, and one question I am thinking about is why, when we face so many negative responses from listeners, do we keep trying over and over again? What drives us to do that?
To talk?
Yeah.
Well, that's how we put ourselves out there, isn't it? Like, if we weren't talking, then what else would we do?
I know that, but from an emotional standpoint, you know that you're going to get something negative, probably going to happen, like you're in the middle of a block and they walk away, okay? Then someone else attempts to talk to you, and you take the same risk again. What keeps us doing that?
From my perspective here, I try to think of it as simple as I have to do it. I have to talk. I have to put myself out there. I am hard pressed to think of any experiences I've had in my own personal life where I've really wanted to be in a conversation, and I've done everything I could to be in that conversation and had a person just walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, what are your thoughts on this?
You know, I have a couple thoughts, but I just want to quickly ask you something, Eric. I remember you sharing a story on Stutter Talk about talking, I think, at a club one night when your band was playing, and there was a girl in the group who was like, I can't take this anymore, meaning your stutter, and she just sort of walked away. And I don't know that that's even a question, Eric, but Jamie, is that what you're talking about
mm-hmm.
when you get... Okay.
Well, let me clarify, though.
Yeah, please. Yeah.
That isn't what happened. Basically, I was outside of a bar at that point, and yeah, someone said that flat out to me. However, the person didn't walk away, and we kept talking. And
oh, so she stayed.
I guess. Yeah, I guess I kind of made it a point to talk at that point. Like, I felt a strong urge after that happened to talk.
Okay. I think, Jamie, that speaking for myself, I had to give myself permission to stutter.
Hey everybody. Peter had to step out here because his sister-in-law just went into labor, so we send our best, Peter, and Lisa and Gwen and the family, and we hope to get some good news soon. Meanwhile, Jamie and I are going to keep things going. I just think, and I can't find any use in taking somebody else's feelings, somebody else's biases, somebody else's harsh reactions in front of mine. And certainly, I can't sit here and say that without also saying that I have felt that way a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say that we might benefit a lot from kind of taking a step back.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like a lot of times people we're talking to, they don't know anything about stuttering, and mm-hmm. they just don't know what to do. And in some situations like that, it's entirely likely that the second the listener sees an opportunity to kind of get out of the conversation, maybe they do, and maybe that's what's happening there. Like, mm-hmm. perhaps they perceive a loss of eye contact or a slight look away or a weird hesitation as the stutterer being ashamed or embarrassed, and when they find that opportunity, they take it, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I personally think that the stutterer has to kind of take some kind of responsibility in stuttering confidently and kind of making sure that their voice is heard. And mm-hmm. and I'm not saying that, you know, you're never going to run into a person who is just flat out rude and really does just walk away. But I think my gut feeling is that most times it's because the listener is uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they were never instructed how to handle themselves in situations like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally agree with that. But that still doesn't negate the stutterer's feelings. You know, like you're in this block, and they start to talk to somebody else. Granted, they don't know what to do, but that doesn't take away from the fact that the stutterer is not going to feel very good about that. And yet, if a situation like that came up again where someone was trying to engage you in conversation, chances are we'd attempt it again. And where is communication so innate that we risk each time we open our mouth, we risk not being heard, we risk being ignored, or whatever? Like, we keep doing it. What drives us? Why aren't we all, like, just not talking? You know?
Yeah. Well, I feel like, what would we do if we didn't keep trying it? Would mm-hmm. we just not engage in conversation anymore and kind of shut ourselves off from people? Which by the way, is a completely valid reaction and response to have.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I just have to look at it like, it's kind of a pride thing too. I need to be heard. I have this desire to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think it is for you, Jamie? Why do you keep coming back for more?
Oh, yeah. Because the need to communicate and be heard is just very great, and it's keeping you as, you know, as a member of society, and that's why I keep going back for more. But there were times I attempted to avoid conversations at any cost.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess we could go into a kind of cost-benefit analysis here.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, yeah, the cost is great. Like, that embarrassment and shame and anxiety, those feelings suck.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to consistently feel those. And of course, yeah, to a certain degree, that stuff almost becomes comfortable. And not that the feelings are comfortable feelings, but, you know, going to that place and being able to kind of get shameful and embarrassed and anxious and all that stuff. I mean, we're so used to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that stuff is terrible. But the benefit here outweighs the cost. The benefit being we as people have to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna keep coming back for more.
Yeah. I think that I think that's it. It makes sense because those feelings and emotions dissipate after a while, and when they're not right in your face, you know they felt bad, but you don't know how bad they felt. So you just keep trying.
Would you say that in that sense, stuttering, kind of a life spent stuttering, hardens us?
I think it builds a resilience in us. I don't and wouldn't use the term hardened because I think we're the most loving, accepting, empathetic people around. But it just makes us stronger, I think, you know, because it didn't kill us, so we just keep doing it, and I think we're maybe able to handle more of that emotional pain than the average person, maybe.
So we have kind of a higher threshold.
Yeah, that's the word.
We
perfect.
Develop this higher threshold for those kinds of speaking anxieties that I'm sure a lot of people have, and I dare say most people probably have them to some degree, but being in a sense forced. I would say that because we do have such an innate responsibility, you could call it, to be heard. You know, we're kind of forced to put ourselves in that situation. And, I don't know. How do we find comfort then? Like, how do we sit back and reflect on what could be a lot of heartache and fight on? Like, what makes that easier?
I think just time, because you get used to it. You expect it. It's a part of the course. That's there. We go again. It's even though you may have some emotion behind that, it's not like the 2x4 hitting your head. You know, it doesn't come down as hard. It's like, oh, that didn't feel good. What do you expect?
Yeah. I would add that in my opinion, time is kind of like the X factor, though. And to me, doing things like talking about stuttering, finding other people who stutter to kind of share these experiences, being able to laugh when a person walks away from you,
mm-hmm.
could definitely comfort us a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. I mean, there is humor in there, and I think we have to touch upon it. I mean, an example I just thought of, a person who doesn't have eye contact and they're in a really long block, or they close their eyes, they'll listen or left like 10 seconds ago and they don't even know it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You open your eyes, oh, where'd they go? So you gotta laugh. It's just crazy, crazy things. But you're right, Eric, that we need to be heard as members of society, and we just get, it happens so often, it doesn't have the same impact as it did when we were 10 or 15. You know, it's the time we do it. You get used to it.
And normalizing stuttering.
Mm-hmm.
And a great way to normalize it is to laugh about it,
mm-hmm.
in productive ways.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
go. Agreed. Yes.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Let's. there hasn't been that much agreeing on Stutter Talk lately. So very good.
Yes.
Why don't we take a little break and then come back and talk a little bit more?
You bet.
With you, Jamie Rocchio.
Stutter Talk is now offering membership for a donation of $25 or more a year. By becoming a member, you are investing in keeping Stutter Talk's free services thriving. Stutter Talk's future plans and aspirations include podcasting from conferences, launching the Stutter Talk Junior podcast, which will focus on reaching children and teens who stutter, purchasing new equipment to record roundtable discussions held at local self-help meetings, and redesigning the website so that they reach more people. Become a member of Stutter Talk and keep the dream alive.
Hey!
You are back with Stutter Talk. Eric Jackson. Peter had to step out here with Jamie Rocchio. You hanging in there, Jamie?
Oh, yeah. You bet.
Jamie, do you ever feel like stuttering has negatively impacted our ability to be good conversationalists? Growing up stuttering, we spend so much time worrying about stuttering before we're gonna stutter, sometimes months before specific occurrences.
Yep.
During our stuttering and after our stuttering, when we're looking back, reflecting and saying, God, I wish I had said this. I wish that that came out a little more clearly so my point was taken or my thoughts were maybe better understood.
Definitely. But I think that there's a little twist. I think when we're attempting to converse with fluenters, that's more difficult. But when we attempt to converse with other stutterers, I don't think that there's an issue at all. I really think take an NSA conference, for example. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of communicating. There's a lot of conversations. And it just seems to flow. But put me in a room with three other people. Number one, I probably couldn't get a word in if I tried. And number two, I'm sure that whatever I had to say would be lost somewhere. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, you bring up an interesting point, because there is something when we're sitting around in a group of stutterers that certainly makes conversation a little bit easier. But there's still a part of me that thinks, for all of those years of kind of never listening to what the other person was saying, constantly being consumed by my own feelings and frustrations and anxieties and all of that stuff. Like, I must have missed out. We must have missed out on what it truly is just to be able to sit back and have small talk and feel like we do know what to say when. Just for the simple fact that we didn't do it as much as many other people because we were looking internally as opposed to doing both.
Oh, absolutely, because the thing about having a conversation is actively listening to what other people are saying. There are many times for me that I sit and in the middle of a conversation, and I in my head, I have great things, I think great things to add, but I do censor. How important is it? How relevant to the conversation is it? Should I even make an attempt? Is this a topic in which I'm passionate? This stuff goes through my head because I don't always say what's in my head. I'm constantly censoring. And with that censoring, I'm missing key points of the conversation. And by the time I decide to say it, they're on another topic. So, yeah, messes me up.
I'm so glad we're talking about this because, in fact, I am kind of changing my mind a little bit. Because I completely agree with you when you say we feel like we have great things to add. And we feel like these things would interest other people, would interest ourselves, would just make for good small talk, good conversation, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you're starting to make me think that we know how to be good conversationalists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not all of us, but, you know, a lot of us do, right?
Yep.
But it's that distraction that happens with stuttering, like such a important part of being good at small talk and being able to converse with other people is timing. Mm-hmm. And we have this thing where sometimes things come out at the right time, but a lot of times things don't come out at the right times.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be taken, and it's easy to take that as something that's impeding the conversation. I just want to make one more point, and then I want to hear your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I also will say that with one other person, I don't experience nearly as much of this trouble. And with one other person, it just seems a little bit easier in the sense that there's like a back and forth, and there's you say something, the other person says something, and it's a little bit easier to focus on a conversation when there are less parties involved.
Mm-hmm.
But the more people getting involved, to me, there's something way harder about that. What do you think that is?
Well, one thing, when it's one-on-one, there's like this, my turn, your turn, my turn, your turn. When there's a group, there's no who's going to go next. It's whoever can jump in the fastest when there's a break to jump in. And that's where we can't do it. At least I can't do it. I see the break, I open my mouth, nothing comes out, everyone else is talking. You know, I can't, it's the jump in, the timing.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. And nine times out of 10, at least for me, I never even get it acknowledged that I'm in that conversation. So, yeah, it's, I'm sitting there and everyone's conversing and I can't get in, and I just end up being an observer.
Because what happens with that whole jumping thing you're talking about is, sure, if we find a way to have enough gumption to jump in anyway, get our thoughts out. The problem is, and it's definitely more apparent in a group. The problem is that if you're blocking when you have something to add, right? And then someone else jumps in and says something. Yeah, of course. We have pride. A lot of us have pride, and we try to get our thought out anyway. Then you're kind of dealing with a situation of introducing this pragmatically inappropriate addition. You know, it's like, yes, it's cool, but then you're putting this really on everybody else because, again, it's just going to come off a lot of times as being the being at the wrong place at the wrong time. And it reminds me of a Saturday Night Live skit I saw once. the guy, I think he was played by Rob Schneider. But the guy who made the joke like 30 seconds after it should have been made. And obviously that person is viewed as, I hate to be crass here, but weird. Like, where did that come from? What are we supposed to do? And now are we supposed to go back into the conversation? Like, what do we do?
Right. And here's another twist. As you're talking about that, I'm thinking, assuming you're with friends, people you know, the fluenters we befriend, because we're pretty nice and we'll do that.
The fluenters.
Yeah, the fluenters. Wait.
I just need to clarify that there's nothing wrong with fluenters, and we're not saying that in a derogatory way.
Right, I was just joking around. That's all I was doing. Okay. But you got fluent friends, and they've known you a while, and you've established that you don't take kindly to people speaking for you or interrupting you. Okay, so they know this etiquette. Now, watching the conversations, people are talking over each other all the time.
Yeah.
Then if you attempt to talk, I feel like I'm imposing, because they know that they're, quote, supposed to stop and wait for me, and it interrupts their momentum.
Wait a second, Jamie. You're feeling too guilty.
Oh, no.
You're being too nice.
We need to develop an anti-guilt pill. That's what we need to do.
Yeah. maybe we could talk to Dr. McGuire about that.
I think that's a good thing. But anyway, that's guilty or not. I'm not saying I'm going to feel really guilty, but I'm imposing. I feel like I'm imposing.
Right.
Because I interrupted their flow, and they know if they try to talk to me or interrupt me, that I'm not going to like that. Now, all my friends are pretty good except one friend. And his response to me is, you know what? 90% of the time I know what you're going to say anyway. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not the point.
Yeah.
But I think it's an imposition.
Because if we can't speak for ourselves, you know, like, it goes back to that whole innate feeling that we, as people, feel a need to express ourselves through speech.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. I have a one final thought on this.
Yep.
And I feel that there's something amazingly powerful of turning into stuttering guy. And what stuttering girl. And it's just easier to say stuttering guy.
Yeah.
But there is something really strong about forcing your way in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's empowering. And really, we have a right to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because people who don't struggle with these interruptions, they don't have to face that problem, you
mm-hmm.
know? And they are, in my eyes, more allowed to just say what they want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this thing that could be incredibly powerful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It could make you feel good. There's pride in making sure that you say what you want to say. And a lot of us have gained so much from that. However, on the flip side, it's exactly. It's like we in order to achieve that, we have to almost become this kind of conversational bully.
Exactly. And you know what, that brings up something that was said to me many years ago, and someone said to me, "You stutter is just like to monopolize the conversation."
Yes, and people say that a lot. Like,
yes,
like I'll run into speech therapists who are in the field of stuttering who have been working with people who stutters for a long time and who, in my opinion, get stuttering to a large degree.
Mm-hmm.
But on numerous occasions, I've heard when the conversation has been rooted in this self-acceptance, in this pride thing, in this going out there and feeling okay to stutter, no matter what. People inevitably, or these people inevitably bring up the fact that, well, yeah, but when you're doing that, you have to be careful to be pragmatically appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, we can't win then.
No, it's a losing battle.
Unless you become fluent.
Well, yeah, okay. No. There's another twist. Unless you accept that maybe in a conversation the rules don't apply. You know, maybe we need to be interrupted. Maybe. So that we're not monopolizing the conversation. Because if people are feeling that way, they're not going to listen to what you're saying anyway.
Right. And, right. And that's why it's a losing battle there.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
see. Uh-oh. Well, we can't end a Stutter Talk episode on saying, oh, well, that's why it's a losing battle.
No, so, we can't.
So I would like to throw it over to you. And I would like you to give us one more final thought then. What do we do then? How can we handle this a little better? Because it seems clear that this is going to happen. And this is a reality.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we make coping with it a little bit easier?
We move all stutterers to one island. No.
Well, then, right.
Like the island of the misfit toys, you know?
But then when people start procreating and everything, there will inevitably be some people who get mixed into that population who don't stutter. So what do we do with them? We ship them out?
No. But the stuttering is the norm, you see. So these little fluenters learn how to work with us. And they're used to it, and they just don't do what's inappropriate.
Okay, well, let me turn this around on you then.
Okay.
Because we do have this innate need to be heard, to have our voices heard, do you think that we're being fair to the little fluenters? Because maybe they have a need to speak faster, to get thoughts out, to interrupt, to do all of those things that fluenters in this world do.
Well, let me just give you an example. Two friends of mine from the NSA met there, married. They both stutter. They have a 5-year-old daughter who is a fluenter, and they bring her to the conferences, and this little girl has learned to wait patiently, maintain eye contact, and I asked her mom, how did you do that? And she just says, if somebody's working that hard to talk to you, you need to listen and you need to wait. Mm. And she was, it's the best etiquette on this 5-year-old.
Yeah, that is, and that just kind of gave me chills.
Mm-hmm.
In because, this, yeah.
Oh, but because this last conference, I was talking to the little girl every once in a while. She would look at her mom if I was in a long block. Her mom would just nod her head yes, and the little girl just waited. Hmm. I mean, it was beautiful.
Yeah. That's like a utopia, a stutterer's utopia.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to close the show out here by saying that Stutter Talk will be doing a raffle for one-way tickets to Stutter Island. I'm just kidding, because hey, we can. I am convinced, and I have to be convinced, that while in our a lifetime, we will likely never get the perfect speaking situation, or what we feel like is the perfect speaking situation always. We can send our message out, and we can put it out there, and we could have some of these little fluenters out there promoting good listening.
Mm-hmm.
When mm-hmm. we're talking about stuttering.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just think, young kids at the NSA have siblings who are fluent. They're learning. They go to school. They meet a classmate that stutters. They know what to do. They'll tell others what to do. It's beautiful.
I agree.
It's happening.
I agree with you. And let's make it happen.
That's it. So I'm not going to stop talking to you.
Well, if you have to ask me that question, I'm going to say no.
Just for the record.
You have been listening to Stutter Talk, another episode of Checking In with Jamie. Jamie, we can't thank you enough. You are a hero, as always.
Oh, well, thank you, but remember, I'm only human. Love you guys, everybody in Stutterland. Stutter with pride.
Stutter Talk at StutterTalk.com. 206-888-4619.